Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Achieve Your Impossible podcast. If you're new to the show, Achieve Your Impossible, the podcast, is all about highlighting individuals who overcame trials and obstacles either in their personal or professional lives while pursuing and achieving their goals. It is my hope that, through hearing these stories from people just like you, you are inspired to start the path of chasing your dreams and achieving your impossible. Along with rating and subscribing to the podcast, you should cruise over to my Facebook page by the same name as the podcast, Ethan A. Taylor, Achieve Your Impossible, to follow me there. It's on the Facebook page that I begin laying out the roadmap for achieving your impossible with personal anecdotes from my life and how I was able to achieve my impossible. Now, without further ado, let me introduce my guest for episode 4, Nathan Lambus. I've known Nathan for a long while now. I would say we probably became friends around 2013, 2014 or so through church. Eventually through board games and nerdy things like Dungeons and Dragons and those sorts of things. A Star Wars version, Star Wars version of Dungeons and Dragons to make it even nerdier.
Yeah, exactly.
as if it wasn't nerdy enough.
I honestly though, is like Star Wars nerdy? I feel like Star Wars is cool.
It's becoming mainstream now. Yeah,
it is. I feel like it was always mainstream. Like Star Wars was one of those things that was super successful from the get-go. Like, you don't get any nerdier really than Dungeons and Dragons unless you're talking like LARP,
which but we still need to do.
I am down to LARP and you know it. I just need to find the right place and time.
Hey, when we do, when you do post-apocalyptic, because it'll be after COVID times.
Oh, dude, man, if I could get one of those cool, like, old tire pauldrons, you know what I'm talking about? The shoulder armor?
Yeah, yeah.
Mad Max that thing up. I'd be into it.
I called dibs on Plague Doctor.
We need to get this happening. I'm on board.
We do. This podcast is going to take a completely different turn than normal.
Oh yeah. That's what happens when you get people who are just completely into weird crap.
Yes. Yeah.
Which, you know, I am into weird crap.
Oh, of course. Me too. And it's why we get along so well, right?
I thought you were way too cool for me, like when we first met.
Which is ridiculous.
In retrospect, absolutely. But you were like the younger guy in the Bible study. It was just like, that's a cool dude, and I am not that. So I don't feel like this is someone I could probably be friends with because I'm not on the same level. And, you know, people surprise you.
My girlfriend tells me more than anything that I'm a dork. That's the most common thing she tells me. But on the flip side of your story of thinking that I was cool with you being in grad school, I think you were in grad school at the time or just about to start doing your Master's of Divinity, mm-hmm. And then being the pastor's son as well, and we were at a Bible study. I was like, Nathan's going to think I'm dumb if I say something dumb. And so I would sit there and I'd be like, I want to say this thing, but I don't know if it's dumb. And I would be nervous. And then, like, having met you and knowing you now and stuff, you wouldn't think that at all. But that was my initial perception of, like, I don't want him to think I'm dumb. And then to tell Larry, and Larry thinks I'm dumb.
Oh, gosh. That sounds like me. Weird thing about me is that, like, I'm a really big introvert. So for a lot of people, that comes off as unapproachable and cold. Because like, if I don't know you, I don't want to talk to you because that means that I have to put myself out there and you might judge me. So, I definitely tend to be one of those people who sits and listens and nods and only opens my mouth when I feel really sure that I'm going to say something worth saying. And I can definitely see where you would have gotten that impression about me.
Yeah, I'm kind of similar. Like, if I'm going to talk to somebody, I need to know why I want to talk to them. Otherwise, I'm not just going to go up and say, hi, I'm Ethan. And I think that's where board games were so good for us because
it
just gives you a thing to talk about that it is not super important or anything. It's just having a good time.
It gives you a reason to be together beyond just like, let's hang out and see how this works. It gives you an activity to do that you do at the same time and gives you enough to think about that you don't have to talk to each other, but also gives you reasons to talk to each other and space in between, which that's why I love board games. Board games should be about people, about the people that are around you. And I think it's why they're having such a big heyday right now, except for, you know, COVID.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of threw a wrench in the whole getting into a room with your friends kind of thing.
When we first met up for board games, I had never played anything outside of the traditional Monopoly, Sorry, that sort of area. So it was a whole new world for me.
It's always a whole new world every time someone cracks open that like designer board game box. My first game was a enormous game called Arkham Horror. It takes 6 hours at least to play. It is completely cooperative, so you're playing with everybody all together. You're all on the same side. It's you against the game. And I remember banging my head against this 50-page rule book over and over and over again, trying to understand it, and then playing the game and losing, and then being like, that was the most fun I've ever had losing something. And I've never looked back since.
Yeah, I think that's the best part about the cooperative games was I'm used to playing games where one person wins, and I hate losing. And so When you're playing those cooperative games, it takes that element out of it. And then I can really be like, oh, this really is just about having fun. I don't have to be a sociopath and be like, how am I going to win? I got to win.
Yeah, I was going to say, you are into the competitive things. You're used to being competitive. What?
I know. It's weird. I know it's a big revelation right now, but I've learned that about myself.
I'm learning so much about you that I didn't know.
I can hear the shock in your voice right now.
Yes, definitely. So do we want to like actually like side turn into the topic at hand, or do we just want to keep geeking out over things? It's entirely up to you. This is your podcast.
Let's steer into the topic at hand, because I am 100% certain we will geek out at various points.
This is going to take some weird segues, just as a warning for everybody who listens. It's just how it is.
It is, yeah. It's very much how our normal conversations go. I mean, we had a conversation for half an hour before this about what we want to talk about, and for most of the time we spent talking about Star Wars. So,
I mean, that's any conversation with me. I'm a very passionate man. I'm very passionate about Star Wars. I have deep feelings. So if you even mention it, be prepared. Be prepared to know all of my feelings about anything pertaining to a Star War.
I'm just going to randomly, like, in the middle of nowhere, just drop it. Like, I'll reference something Star Wars and just see where we go.
Yeah. Just drop Darth Jar Jar into a conversation at some point.
I'm still disappointed that didn't happen in the final movie. Trevor and I talked about that literally like 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago.
It might as well have.
Everything else was in there. Why not Darth Jar Jar?
Okay. Before we get into anything, and we're losing so many people, but I don't care. How much better would Rise of Skywalker have been if you literally replaced Palpatine with Jar Jar?
Oh, so much better.
So much better.
Strike Misa down.
Misa all the Sith.
And make him old and wrinkly too.
Oh no.
And no, I mean, nobody saw Palpatine. At least I didn't see Palpatine coming. Nobody would see Jar Jar coming.
Nobody. It should, and like that should have been like a last minute revelation. Like, get to that like Sith throne room, and then the chair turns, and it's Jar Jar frickin' Binks.
That'd be sweet. It'd have instantly become my favorite Star Wars movie.
Yes, absolutely. Every time. I will take it. So, yeah, school and stuff.
Yeah, so.
So good at segues.
Yes. We are so smooth. Mm-hmm. So your bachelor's is in English writing with a minor in philosophy from Spring Arbor, and then Master of Divinity, which is sweet.
It's a great title.
Concentration of Biblical Studies from Liberty University, the Rawlings School of Divinity. And when you went to, when you started graduate school, at that point in time, you were married and had three kids, correct? Four was about to be on the way.
I had two kids when I started my degree. I had three by the time I was done. The fourth was born shortly after.
That's right. That's right. Hey, I was in Texas when Hazel was born. Yeah.
Yeah, you were. Gosh, that's weird to think about.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. See, I got all confused. I was thinking Hazel was the baby in our class that Christmas, but it was Cece.
It was Cece crawling around the floor. Yeah. So many people in our Bible study group, like, I feel like have memories of Desi crawling around the floor in my dad's living room, Cece crawling around the floor in the Bible study room in the old college and career class, and then Hazel. I've had a long storied career as a Bible teacher.
You have, yeah.
It's weird to think back on now, but yeah, I've been teaching for over 10 years.
Wow.
Yeah, because I first started teaching 9th and 10th grade at Hillcrest shortly after Orion was born, and Orion's 11.
Man, that's just insane.
Yeah.
I mean, because my I don't know if it's because I've been in school forever, but my time, I always think that, like, I just graduated high school. So when I think back, it seems like those days of, like, Wednesday night classes and things pre-Texas, it seems like that was yesterday. I don't have a concept of that being, like, almost 5 years ago now.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I recognize that feeling of, like, feeling like, oh, I'm just out of high school, or, oh, I'm just out of college. Like, I recognize feeling that way, but I'm 36 now. Well, I'll be 36 on Friday.
Oh, happy early birthday.
Hey, thanks. And I finally have gotten to the point where I don't feel like I just got out of college. It's weird. Like, you would think that after four kids and, like, going through both a degree and a master's, that, like, you would feel like an old person immediately. But I think something about our culture, like, makes us want to hang on to it for so long. And I am finally starting to embrace my grumpy old man.
I agree.
The one that's been inside me all along.
Yeah, I definitely agree with something in our culture having us kind of pull back to that. My committee chair for my PhD, he told me, he was like, you know, some of these people, they graduate, they become assistant professor someplace, and they think they're still in that college age. They still want to hang out with the students and things. And he's like, it's just sad. He goes, don't ever be that person.
Yeah, yeah. It can get weird.
Yeah.
It's fine. So, do we want to head back to...
Yeah, so when you were... I would imagine that a lot of people kind of contemplate, at least to one degree or another, going back to school once they're married and have kids. And what was kind of your driving force between deciding to do that, having already had two kids and then eventually having a newborn and being in school as well?
Honestly, the driving force was that it had always been my intention to go to seminary. So we're going to have to rewind even further, because, 2007, I graduated, Spring Arbor University with my English degree, my philosophy minor. I married Rachel right out of, college. And the entire plan was, I'm going to start doing seminary in the fall. So I'll start at the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary in Louisville,
That's
Kentucky.
Right. Yeah.
So I was accepted to there. I knew I was going. We moved, I think a month before my semester would start, and I started seminary. So the short story there is that I got a job, at a a landscaping place. Rachel got a job at the school library, and I did my first semester, and it sucked. Everything about the seminary experience at Southern Seminary felt like a mill. Like they're just grinding out these people as fast as they can. And like, I don't say that to disparage Southern Seminary. They're a great seminary. It's just, that was my experience there, was that everybody was just trying to hold their heads down and get the thing done. And I think that's one of the weird things about seminaries, is that you have such a wide array of people. So you had me, who was straight out of college going in, and that was a large percentage. But you also had people who were in their 30s and 40s and 50s who were just starting the idea that they could be in ministry. And they have the family, they have the kids, they have the job. And like, seminary to them is something that they just have to get done in order to do the thing that they feel called to do, which is serve in a ministry of some kind. So I don't know if you felt that way about any of your higher degrees, but I definitely felt that way at Southern.
Yeah. So for my master's, it was kind of like what you were describing. People come from all sorts of backgrounds. I mean, physicians, lawyers, psychologists, marketers, business people all wanted to do public health. And then even more so doing a PhD, in my experience, a lot of it was younger people, but there were older people that did have families and things. I never really felt like any of my universities were just trying to grind people out, but I had that intention for myself. So when I went to Texas, the understanding was it was going to be 3 years. And so I was bound and determined to finish in 3 years and get out of there.
Yep.
Which adds a lot of stress and pressure. And then, I mean,
like, so you were one of those people.
Yeah. I was one of those people that was like, I just have to get through this and get done, because I mean, it wasn't very enjoyable for either of us being there. And like, you know, having gone to Louisville, it's difficult when you're away from all your family and friends, completely new setting. And it's a lot
entirely away from your support system. Which makes things incredibly difficult. And so I did my first semester. I did fine, like academically, but I wasn't happy. Rachel was very unhappy in her job, and just being there away from absolutely everything we'd ever known. And so I pulled the plug. I was like, I can't do this to my wife. Out of everything that's going on, I can't put her through this just for something that, like, I want to do. And so we moved back in with my parents to try and get our life sorted. And 9 years later, we moved out into our own home.
That's a hard decision to make, to leave, though, because I was at a point when I was at A&M that I almost left, too. And a lot of my fear with leaving was a personal sense of, I feel like I failed if I leave. So when you were making that decision, was it an easy decision to be like, well, I'm not happy, my wife's not happy, we need to leave? Or did you struggle with any sort of, am I making the right decision type things? Was there any personal strife there?
There absolutely was. I never felt like I was making the wrong choice, but I did feel like a failure. So just for a little more background, my dad is a pastor who got his master's from the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary in Louisville, Kentucky. It's where my brother was born. It's where my sister was born. I was younger than two when he started there. So I spent my first memories are of him being in seminary there. And so when I quit, all of that was wrapped up in it. So just everyone has a complicated relationship with their dad, you know?
Yeah.
So like I have felt that keenly as someone who is not very athletic. I did, when I was in middle school, I tried out for the football team and I did not do well. And I quit that too. And I felt like my dad was going to be so disappointed in me because, you know, my dad, he loves football.
Yes, he does. Especially and Michigan, so like, which is sad for me as somebody, knowing how much your dad loves football, to root for a team that doesn't have a football team just is sad to me. I'm a Buckeye fan, for the listeners.
Yeah. And you know that I am sports agnostic, so like you can't poke me with this
because
I don't care. The sports ball. football is such an important thing to my dad. Like before he felt called to the ministry, his career goal was that he wanted to be a football coach. Like football is incredibly important to him and honestly is still. And so like when I quit that, like I felt like I disappointed my dad. And then my whole life path had been, I'm going to go to the same seminary that my dad went to. Not just because like I want to do it because my dad did it. It was, I honestly truly felt like it was a great seminary. It fit. I am part of the Southern Baptist Church, and it was honestly the top tier of Southern Baptist schools. And I got in, and it just seemed like everything was paving the way in that direction. And my dad did it. I should be able to do it. And then I felt like I disappointed him again. And this is not, again, to say that my dad was actually disappointed in me either time. My dad, if he tells you that story about me quitting the football team, he will tell you that he was proud of me because he hated the way that the coach was talking to the kids. It very much bothered him the way that that football team was being run because it was like a very military kind of thing where they were tearing people down.
Okay.
So like he will tell you to this day that he is glad that I didn't play. And like, I don't think that he was actually disappointed in me when I dropped out of seminary, because again, like the reason was, is that it was not working like for my new family. And, so like, but there's still that like residual, like feeling. Because again, everybody has a complicated relationship with their dad, and all you want to do is make dad proud. And to keep quitting on the things that are important, or the things that you think are important to him, is difficult. So that was part of where I came from. So like when we talk about me starting up seminary again, having two kids and a job and all this other stuff going on in my life, it wasn't so much that like I just randomly decided one day to do it. It was that I was picking up a ball that I had already dropped when I felt more ready for it. So part of the goal that when we moved in with my parents and we got jobs elsewhere, was we wanted to pay my wife's student debt down. And I did not start seminary until we paid off her student loans. So that was the trigger at that point. And it just happened that we had two kids at that point.
Yeah. I think that's a great financial decision, though, that so many people don't make, is that it's so important to get rid of those student loans. It's something I'm kind of going through right now, is trying to get them paid off as quick as possible, because I mean, that's a monster to begin with, and then it just keeps growing.
Oh, gosh. Debt is a monster. Mm-hmm. And, like, you know, you think that it's, you know, $100,000 or whatever. Gosh, I'm going to sound like an old, out-of-touch man, like the millionaire who's like, how much is a loaf of bread? $500? Because I have no idea how much school costs anymore. Like, I've been out of college for a decade and a half. I'm sure that things have skyrocketed again. But, like, we're literally putting people into hundreds of thousands of dollars of debt. But then that compounds on itself year after year after year. Mm-hmm. And, like, it's more than most people's mortgage. Like, I have most of my friends from high school are still paying on their student loans. And like, that is mind blowing to me. Just how expensive it is. And like, no wonder so many people, I feel like the new millennial experience is like going to college, being in a ton of debt, and then moving back in with your parents.
Well,
and that was my path. Like we had debt to pay off, and we moved back in with my parents, and we were lucky enough that we got it paid off. And part of it is luck. We had a good support system in my parents, and I'm not ashamed of having taken that path, because it has worked out for us in the long run. So yeah.
One of my previous posts was about that. It was, the first one was about self-confidence and things. And I said that, you know, I like to tell people self-confidence is just being too dumb to realize how difficult the thing you're wanting to do is. But then kind of retracting on that a little bit and talking about a support system, it's so important to have a strong support system, because if, you know, if the people around you are constantly telling you can't do something, then it's hard to believe that you can do something. So, you know, whether that's being able to move back in with your parents, or I lived with my parents until I was almost 25, rent free, mm-hmm. and everything, that's a huge help. Yep. That not everybody is lucky enough to have.
It is. And like, it's a huge part of how I've been able to not be in constant debt. Like, now that I'm 36 and own my home, like, it's part of that was making what some would consider to be an embarrassing decision and living with my parents for almost a decade. Now, I do feel like I need to add a quick addendum to that, because there is more or less an apartment in my parents' house in the basement where we lived. So it's not like we were rubbing elbows all the time, but you know, we did live with them, and it worked out very well for us. And sometimes you just need to do what you've got to do to make those next steps. And for us, that was living in the basement.
Yeah. And you said some people might look at it as a little embarrassing, but I think that's a good, like, that's a good husband adult decision, you know, to say this might not be the best right now, but long-term it's what's going to be best for us, and kind of putting pride aside and saying, this is just what we need to do right now. And yeah, of course it's worked out wonderfully for you all.
It absolutely has worked out wonderfully for us. So many things in our lives, in Rachel and I's life, has seemed awful at the outset, and then you see the result turning out so well. There are plenty of things that I could name, and I don't want to run off on a ton of tangents on you.
We'll go wherever you lead us.
No. You're the leader, man. This is your podcast. I'm just here to ramble. I'm very good at it. Yeah. So like, I started seminary again because it was still the path that I thought I wanted to go down, that I felt compelled to do. And I'd already had these credits that were going to expire if I didn't use them. So I decided to do Liberty University online and finish that way, while working a job, while being a dad of two kids, while being a husband. And like, it's made it work. So it was worth it.
What was kind of the adjustment like when you started school with having young boys? I'd imagine their schedule kind of changes a little bit in terms of you know, you being busier at certain times that normally you wouldn't be. Did Desi and Orion adapt to that pretty quickly, or were you writing papers and trying to play in the floor at the same time?
It's funny that you say that. Actually, there is one of my favorite pictures of Orion is of me laying on the floor in my bedroom, and him as a baby just underneath me, like propped up on a pillow, because I did most of my schoolwork with a laptop on the floor in my bedroom. And I was working on school at that particular point. And so much of what I remember about doing school was like in a very particular point in that bedroom, right in front of the only bathroom in the basement with my laptop on the floor, like just kind of propping myself up with a pillow. So now that I'm old, I think of like wondering if that's where I got my back problems, but
it could be.
Most of school was done that way. So yeah, a lot of it was a transition. So I had to have things scheduled. So the way that it worked was that as soon as I got home from work, I would start school and I would get everything done that I needed to do for school before supper so that all of my afternoon could be with my family. And for those of you who have done master's degrees, and you might be looking or thinking about me like I'm crazy. You can't look at me. This is a audio format. Obviously you can't look at me like I'm crazy. But the way that I made it work was that the job that I did was very monotonous. So I was a custodian at the time. I actually was the custodian at a church, at our church. Mm-hmm. And what I would do is I would buy all of my school books that I could on Kindle. And if you own a Kindle, you know that they have text to audio capability. So I had my Kindle read all of my school work to me. So all of the reading that I had to get done, I would listen to while I was vacuuming the sanctuary at church or cleaning a toilet.
That's smart.
Or mopping a floor. And so I would have all of my reading done. And like for my degree, it's mostly reading. It's reading, it's writing papers, it's participating in discussion posts on forums. So the large majority of my schoolwork, I actually was able to get done while I was at work. And so it would be the forum stuff that I would come home and I'd do, or like work on a paper. So much of my online school experience was so furthered by the fact that the Kindle exists, that ebooks exist, and that my Kindle could read it to me. Now, it's not reading it to me very entertainingly. It sounded a lot like Siri trying to read a book to you. So it's not something I would recommend if you want an audiobook, but it worked for me. And it was honestly a large part of why I was able to actually spend any time with my family at all.
And I remember when you were going through seminary that some of your favorite courses were those fun foreign languages.
Gosh. Oh man. Yeah. Greek and Hebrew.
I mean, who doesn't read those in their online spare time? Course.
Yeah, no. Yeah, that was one that I could not do online. Like, I couldn't have my Kindle read my Greek homework to me or my Hebrew homework to me. That did not work out well at all. Those were the hardest semesters. The ones where I had to do my Greek and my Hebrew, which, you know, thanks to the magic of being so many years outside of it now, I, you know, like anyone who took one semester of a language, I don't remember any of it.
Were you smart enough to do them in different semesters? Because when I was an undergrad, I messed up and I didn't take general chemistry my first year. So at Miami, you would do Gen Chem, O Chem, Physics. And I didn't take any chemistries my first year. So my sophomore year, I took Gen Chem. My junior year, I had to take O Chem and Physics at the same time.
Oh, geez.
Which was terrible. Please. But so you were able to space yours out more intelligently than I was.
Yeah, and because it was online, like there wasn't a whole lot of competition for like which classes you took when. So you could load up your coursework as far as your schedule and what worked for you. Obviously they had, recommended paths, but like, it wasn't like a class would fill. Like it's because of it being online, they would just add another person or they would have another adjunct who was running it. So honestly, like, online worked really well for me in the way that I learn, which is reading and writing, which you might have, which, you know, the fact that I have a writing degree is probably a big clue to that.
Yeah. And I, like, when you were going through that sort of thing, I kind of felt like I was going through seminary a little bit too, because a lot of what you were studying at the time, that was our Wednesday night lesson.
Yeah. Well, because Brian was going through his Bible courses too.
Yep. Did that help kind of submit things for you when you would read something or listen to it, and then later on you would teach about it or teach on it?
Yes and no. I think that it's one of those difficult things where knowing that you have a teacher who is let me phrase it this way. As someone who has been in Bible studies and in youth groups their whole life, you always know when your teacher has just discovered something and is excited about it, because that'll be the thing that they talk about for so long. And I never really wanted to be that guy. I kind of intentionally try to steer away from being the dude who's like super excited about this one specific concept. Especially like, because when you're talking about seminary stuff, it gets into such, I don't want to say the word pretentious, but if you've ever talked to someone with a higher degree and talk to them about what it is that they learned in their higher degree, you will quickly realize that there's an entirely different language that they're speaking that you don't know. That they're using terms that you don't know. And as someone who is a teacher, I can't indulge that. Like, I could, and I probably have, but part of what I should be doing if I'm a good teacher is communicating the way that a student needs to hear. And I'm not saying that, like, you have to dumb things down. Like, I'm a big believer that if you elevate what you teach, then people generally rise up to it. Mm-hmm. But just because I find something interesting doesn't mean that they find it interesting. And just because I know a big $10 word doesn't mean that they know a big $10 word. It doesn't mean I'm smarter. It just means that I've read different books than they have.
Yeah.
And it's real easy to fall into that trap of feeling like I'm smarter and feeling like I know more and feeling like I'm an authority, when it is my firm belief that as a teacher, you should not do that. Like, you should always realize that your students are just as intelligent as you. Some of them are probably more intelligent than you. They just haven't hit that information yet. Yeah. And respect the people that you are talking to at all times. Yes, it was helpful, like, as far as like teaching goes, but only in giving me confidence in communicating, not so much in that, like, now I have to impart to you all of my knowledge. It's just like, I feel more confident when I communicate the things that I do know, and the things that I do want to talk about, and the questions that I want to ask. Maybe not the most concise answer.
No, I tell people all the time that you don't have to be a genius to get a PhD. You just have to be able to tolerate repetitive failure and some verbal abuse, and you can get one.
Oh, gosh.
And to your point about trying not to use a certain, basically a foreign language, essentially, I always have to kind of remind myself when I'm talking to somebody about biology type things, not because I think I'm smarter, but because I'm like, well, if I can do this, everybody must know it already. Because when you're doing something all the time, it seems easier because you're in the thing. And so I just think, well, because exactly. I know it, if I can figure it out, everybody else can know it too. And then somebody looks at me weird and I'm like, oh wait, they don't speak my language too.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, that's part of why, like, if you get into a big discussion with a bunch of, you know, masters of divinity, like, it's going to sound like a weird conference. Like a weird conference that you weren't invited to, and you're probably not sure you wanted to be invited to.
Well, if I don't know if Jeff Barrett listens to the podcast. If he doesn't, I hope somebody tells him about it. But I would just bring up
God love Jeff Barrett.
I would just bring up the Trinity, and we'll just go from there. You know?
Oh gosh, that is a deep cut. Oh gosh, shout out to Jeff Barrett. Jeff, I love you so much, man, and I will always, always remember when things got too weird and too heavy in our Bible studies that you would always ask the question, what's up with the Trinity? What is the Trinity? And it always worked every time.
Either that, or I would like the always fun Calvinist argument. I would just, you know, in that situation, I'd be like, so what makes you so special that God handpicked you over everybody else?
Oh, no.
Hopefully I'm not offending anybody. If you're Calvinist, I'm saying this in jest. I mean, no offense at all. This is all good Christian humor.
It's okay, man. They're offended. There's nothing you could have done about it. It's done now.
I follow this guy now on Facebook, Cool Carl, and he's a youth pastor and makes these funny, goofy videos. And one of his was all about how not to offend somebody. And it was like, smile, but don't share teeth because you'll offend people who don't have teeth. But better yet, don't smile. But if you don't smile, you'll offend somebody too. And it's all about how you can't go without offending somebody.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Not that you shouldn't try to not offend people.
Yeah.
But
I don't condone openly offending people.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good disclaimer.
I don't want to get canceled on episode 4.
Yeah, there's always going to be someone who doesn't like you. And you know what? That's okay. And like, honestly, that's how I've tried to treat my my career as a teacher at church, is that like, I'm not everybody's flavor. And that's okay. Like, it's okay. You don't have to be the person for everyone. Mm-hmm. I happen to connect well with nerds, weirdly. I don't know why.
I never would have guessed that with you.
I know. It's so antithetical to my character.
As we were talking about the Wednesday night class, it starts, whether it's Sunday morning or Wednesday night, it starts how the podcast started. Like, we start off on something that's like completely unrelated, because it's your belief that those relationships matter. And by building those relationships, then you can move into those other conversations. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that fellowship is important.
Yeah, absolutely. If you ever come to a Bible study led by me, let me tell you, the first 20 minutes to half an hour are gonna be weird, and it's not gonna be a Bible study at all. It's gonna be a bunch of people hanging out, and you know what? I don't apologize for it.
Yeah.
Because I have formed so many good relationships because of that time. That, I mean, it's the way that we treat Bible study, and the way we treat for those of you who aren't as hip or as cool, like our church, Sunday school, the way you treat Bible study or Sunday school, gosh dang, that's going to make us sound like such.
Hey, and
And we get little
people don't do Sunday school anymore.
In the college and career class, so you're talking about people who are in their 20s, we do a coloring sheet on the first Sunday of every month. So if you thought that Nathan and I might just be a little bit cool, now you know that we are in fact not.
Oh, absolutely not. I have never been cool. Like if you ever harbored the illusion that I was even a little cool, put that out your brain right now. I am not. I'm the biggest nerd you will ever meet. But to be fair, the coloring sheets are Andy. That's what he wanted. That is his idea, and I will blame it on him every time. So, if you want to complain to somebody about how he's treating our college students like they're children, it's Andy Coles. He did it.
I approached him about doing this podcast too. I should have made it a three-way podcast.
We wouldn't have gotten anywhere.
We'll have to do a second one with Andy.
Yeah. We'll have to do a redux on this.
Because he will derail us intentionally.
Oh, 100%. That's the kind of person Andy is.
We'd be talking about Smash Up, which is another board game for all you guys that Nathan loves.
Yeah. He knows exactly how to make me mad. We've had a teaching relationship for more than 10 years. So he knows me very well. We both know that we are the opposite end of the spectrum as far as the things that we focus on when we teach. Mm-hmm. And we know how to annoy each other very well.
Which is the mark of a great friendship.
I love Andy. Andy is great. I'm the only one that's lasted with him this long.
Oh, that's kind of sad.
you need to ask him about it. Like if he agrees to be on your show, specifically ask him how many co-teachers he went through before he got to me.
As you're telling the story, I'm thinking of the song Looking For in the background as Andy's like with all these other teachers.
Yep. Our match was just meant to be.
Aww.
It's a bromance.
Very much so. And that's why Rachel is the adult in our class and she keeps us on track.
Oh yeah. Her entire job is to say, boys, focus.
Multiple times.
Yeah, that definitely is the case. So she probably should be here right now. But
she should, because we have not been focusing for the past like 10
minutes. We have not. But you know, hopefully it's entertaining to somebody. It's entertaining to me.
I mean, part of the point of the podcast though is so you can get to see people's personalities, that we're not just robots and things. And you know, I don't want people to get the idea that everybody I bring on, they're all these people who are like, well, I've got this goal and I've got to do everything to get it done. Like that, you know, there's all sorts of stuff that happens in life.
I know. Like, and honestly, like it was really funny to me when you asked me to be on this, because like I talked to Rachel about it and she, you know, it's like, achieve your impossible. What are your goals? And she's like, Nathan, what is your goal? And I looked at her and I said, to have a quiet evening at home, alone and in peace.
Well, I was talking.
And she's like, "How achievable do you think that is?"
So when my cousin was first on, she was kind of having this conversation about she didn't feel like she was very successful either. And kind of this, and I've had this conversation with all the guests I've had so far, is that what success is in the eye of the beholder, whatever it is, like that your goal is, who's to say other than you, what is successful to you? And that's why I kind of came with the idea of the podcast of Achieve Your Impossible, because everybody looks at their life a different way and views what is impossible to them in a different way. And my thought behind starting it was, you know, growing up in a small town, I was the first person in my immediate family to go to school. or go to college. I mean, I should say I worked multiple jobs through school. Like, you know, if you were to pick somebody who's going to go on and get a doctorate, I wouldn't be the guy that you would pick. And so that was my impossible. And so success is different for everybody. And it all depends on what you want. Some people, success is being a CEO. Other people is having a family. And it varies. And there's, you know, nobody on the outside of at least you and your little family group has a right to say this is successful or that's not. It's all what success is to you.
Yeah, honestly, that's a great point. And I think that it's such a weird, honestly kind of messed up part of our society that we think of achievement as being related to our jobs or how much money we make or how much stuff we've got. Because like, as soon as you asked me to be on this thing, that's immediately where my brain went. It's like, Ethan, you know how much money I make. I'm in social work. By any metric of American success, like, I'm not really that. But I have gotten to the places where I want to be in other areas. I have the family that I want to have. I have the ministry that I wanted to have. I have the friends that I want to have. It's such a different definition of achievement, really. And I feel like there are a whole lot of people in different generations that would view that as such a low bar. But like, you know what? Heck with that. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, it, all that matters is getting to where you want to be. And it's okay to be content there.
Yeah, I like this direction in the podcast as a whole, because my idea of first doing it was showing people that no matter what's going on in your life, you can achieve whatever it is you set your mind to. And mm-hmm. that you shouldn't be the first person to tell yourself no. That let somebody else tell you no, you tell yourself yes, and keep going until you find that person who tells you yes, and you know, you've made progress toward achieving your goal. I didn't really see it initially as kind of this conversation that I've now had with all my guests, and that, you know, success is measured a million and five different ways. Mm-hmm. And I think we so often we look at, you know, whoever is on the TV, whether it's an actor or an athlete or some other famous person who's accomplished some crazy thing, and we say, well, that's successful. If I don't get to that level, I'm not successful. And that's just not true.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, it's okay to have small dreams. Mm-hmm. Like, that's fine. Like, I was a little bit joking when I said that my dream was to, like, have a quiet evening at home, alone and in peace.
But, I like how, like, you told Rachel it was to be alone and in peace. How did she take that? Did she pick up on the alone part? I'm just wondering.
Well, if she didn't have the same dream, she would probably be a little more offended. No, that's the thing is that we have four children. So being alone is a treat. Like, being alone is the greatest gift that you can give to your spouse. So, like, if I want to do something incredibly loving for my wife, it's, honey, I've got the kids taken care of. I will feed them. I will put them to bed. I will clean up the house. I'll do all this stuff. Go be by yourself. And that is one of the most loving acts that I can do. And like, I know there are parents out there right now who are feeling that so hard.
Oh yeah, definitely during COVID times, for sure.
Oh gosh. Well, we had my dad over tonight, cause Rachel made, pot roast. Not pot roast, pork loin. And there was so much of it that she was like, invite your dad over. Like, some of your listeners may know that my sister just had a baby. So my mother left my dad for a baby. And who knows when she'll be coming home. So he's fending for himself. So we're trying to take care of my father and make sure that he gets fed.
It's very important.
It is important to make sure that your father gets fed.
I ran into him one time when I was living at home. My parents were gone at a basketball tournament with my sister. And I had like frozen pizza, chicken nuggets, chocolate, and that sort of stuff. I imagine if I ran into Larry at Walmart right now, he would have very similar items.
Oh, 100%. 100%. So, like, we had my dad over, and he was like, you know, your mom's gone. I can come watch the kids whenever.
And, did you guys leave, like, right then?
No, because there's nothing to do because it's COVID times.
That's unfortunate.
Literally, the only thing that we could think to do was, like, pick up supper from somewhere, and we were literally eating supper already. So like Rachel's been like looking online at like which like on days where the weather will be decent and maybe we can have a date for the first time in a year. Oh gosh, and I just started working from home today, so like I'm literally home all day now. We don't have an office in my house. I have a 900 square foot house.
You just need to sneak off to the camper.
It's cold, and the camper is parked at the church right now.
Oh, no. Well, none of that's going to work.
It was nice when the camper was set up, though. Like, when we were working on the camper, and I could just escape out there, that was nice. That was very nice. But yeah, being alone and at peace is great. And it's not that like Rachel and I don't love spending time together. We are each other's favorite person. But you still need some time alone from time to time.
I'm glad,
and especially some time away from your kids.
I'm glad you pointed that last part out, because as soon as you were saying, and Rachel and I, we like to spend time together, my first thought was, oh no, I almost just started a big rumor at the church. Everyone's like, did you hear Ethan's podcast? Nathan said he just wants to be alone for a little bit. Are they okay? Like, you walk in,
his marriage is on the rocks.
Weird. Yeah. You look at your email, you're on the prayer chain. You're like, what?
Oh, no. Yeah, it's funny how those rumors go around sometimes anyway.
We would be in so much trouble.
No, it's fine. They can say what they want. The only person whose opinion matters to me is in the other room talking to her college roommate right now.
Well, that's who I was thinking we're going to be in trouble with when the rumor got started, was Rachel.
Oh, no. Rachel doesn't care. She knows better. She had to deal with people like rumoring that like she was pregnant when we got married.
Oh, wow. So,
yeah. You know, yeah, exactly. The couple who hadn't kissed until they got engaged. Yeah, that we were the ones you needed to watch out for.
You should tell that story. That's a sweet story. It's completely off track, but it's very cute. Valentine's Day is coming up. I think it's worth telling.
Okay, but I mean, this might wreck some people's Valentine's Day.
Oh, that's like, true.
If they hear it, then they might look at their significant other and wonder why they're not as romantic as this guy.
There's some poor guy out there whose girlfriend will listen to this and go, why aren't you this romantic? Why don't you do things like this for me? When are we going to Italy?
yeah, exactly. So, I mean, you threw Italy out there, so now I feel like I have to say. Now, for all of those people out there, there are also others who are like, you guys didn't kiss until you got engaged? What the heck is wrong with you? What the heck, man? So, you know, you are fine as well. You do you.
And that
whatever.
First kiss is scary. You got to give a guy a break, you know? Sometimes it takes.
Oh, gosh, yes. Oh, gosh, yes. So, okay. Here's the story. My wife and I started dating in college. So she was my first girlfriend. I was her first boyfriend. And so we had a lot of figuring things out to do in the 3 years of our relationship. And one of the things that we had both mutually decided was that we wouldn't kiss until we were engaged, and that we weren't really going to say I love you because it was too much at that particular point. So we set those goals. And so after 2 years of dating, we had to take a cross-cultural trip for our college. And we both had the opportunity to go together. And we both picked Italy. So we spent 3 weeks in Italy with all of our college friends. Well, not a, a good number of our college friends. Not all of them went on the same trip, unfortunately. But we went to Italy. We discovered all kinds of great new Italian vistas and cities. I'd never heard of Assisi or Lucca before, and now they're like my favorite Italian cities. Went to Cinque Terre, went to Florence, Rome, Lufthansa, which is a not Luft, oh, Lufthansa. That's the airline.
Nice.
That's the German airline we went on. No, I was thinking of Caserotto, which is in the Italian Alps, and we went to Venice. So I knew that our trip was going to make it to Venice eventually, and I had been telling people since high school that I was going to propose to my future wife in a gondola in Venice, because that was the most stereotypically romantic thing that I could think of, and I thought it was funny. Well, here I am with a serious, steady girlfriend, 2 years into a relationship, 1 year before we graduate, and I know we're going to be in Venice in a gondola. And so I bought a ring, which I kept in my pocket most of the trip. And I paid 120 euros, which is a lot of money, so that we could have a gondola to ourselves. And so I remember gliding through the canals of Venice. Everything was magical and beautiful. I remember our gondolier just pointing out all of the historical things and not really paying attention to any of it, because I knew it was going to happen. And I remember sitting in this gondola, like shaking because I was nervous. And finally, as we were about to go out into the Grand Canal, I said some words to my wife, which will remain between my wife and I, and no one else knows what was said, and I won't reveal it here because that would be a breach of our contract. But she started to realize what was coming on. I reached into my pocket. I pulled out a ring, which I could not open the box because my hands were shaking so hard.
Oh no.
Yeah, exactly. This is one thing you don't want to happen in a boat.
Yeah. Yeah, I can just see it like falling over the edge or something.
Oh, 100%. So she takes it, she says yes, and we share our first kiss. I told her I loved her. We shared our first kiss. And then we got out right into the Grand Canal. All the bells started ringing. This is a true story. The moment she said yes, all the bells in Italy started ringing. And we went out into the Grand Canal, and all of our friends were in their own gondolas, like not 20 yards away. We hadn't seen them the whole time. And then like we finally like met up like right afterward.
That's a great story.
And they all cheered because they knew what happened. The only person who didn't know what happened was our gondolier.
Completely oblivious, huh?
He completely oblivious. Another gondolier had to tell him.
Nice.
So the first time I said I love you and the first time that I kissed my wife was on a gondola in Venice. And seemed to have worked out pretty well for children and 13, almost 14 years later.
I would say that's a pretty solid run.
Yeah, so that was my impossible, was achieving marriage, because it was looking pretty unattainable at several points during my life.
Well, I mean, I think at least from my standpoint, when I'm in a relationship, I'm always like, how long until they become smart enough to realize I can do better than this goofball? That's what I tell my girlfriend now all the time. I'm like, I'm just wondering how long until you look at me and go, you know what? Why am I with this weirdo? Like, what? I told her, I said, are you
with better than this?
Yeah, I was like, are you with me because of the pandemic? And you're like, it's safer than finding someone new right now. Like, I'm going to wait until the pandemic clears.
Wait until the air is clear.
Because as an epidemiologist, I'm probably one of the people you want around in the pandemic. She's like, this guy knows what he's doing. Once we survive the pandemic, if.
Exactly. You know, who are you going to go to during a global pandemic? The virus guy, the guy who knows about viruses. Who are you going to go to during a zombie apocalypse? The guy with the guns.
Yep.
Like you're high up on the list right now. You're a hot commodity.
I mean, I'm just waiting for us to play a real life version of Dead of Winter when the zombies come.
I have a plan.
You do? Well, that's good.
I have my zombie preparedness plan. Yeah, we'll see how it works out. I can't say too much about it, otherwise it'll ruin things. It'll ruin things when people come storming my hideout.
Fair
looking
enough.
For supplies. Yeah, you can't share that stuff.
No. For sure not. But I know where you live, so I'll definitely be there.
Yeah. For those of you who are a little bit lost, Dead of Winter is a board game about zombies.
Yes.
And it is my favorite game. And probably the game that we first started playing board games together on, if I'm remembering right.
It was, yeah. It was the first one I played. I actually have Dead of Winter and the expansion as well.
Yeah, we threw you right into the deep end.
Yeah. Yeah. It is a great game, though. A great cooperative game. The last time we played, we exiled Andy because we thought he was a traitor. He wasn't, and he actually kept helping us. He was outside of our commune, and he kept throwing stuff over the fence to help us after we voted him.
To be fair, Andy is always suspicious.
Yes, intentionally. He intentionally tries
always.
To be suspicious.
I know. That's part of the game for him, is trying to see how long it will take you to do the wrong thing.
Not very long for me. I always want to get rid of him. I'm like, better safe than sorry.
Uh-huh, exactly. Like, he could be the traitor. Who knows?
But that's a story for another time, because he and I have a very interesting board gaming relationship where he will throw my donkey and do other mean things. Or cut off my person's arm in the Star Wars role-playing game and put a bomb in it.
He ate your arm in front of you. Again, we're probably losing... We're losing so many people now.
We are.
These are some deep cuts. But for those of you who understand it, you're our people.
Yes. So we're probably at or past an hour. So I don't want to take too much more of your time. But if you were
after you edit out all the tangents, it's going to be like 15 minutes of content.
Oh, so. No. All the tangents are staying.
Oh, okay. Good. I look forward to hearing them again.
I like a more organic podcast. But what advice would you give yourself, whether that be when you first went to Louisville or when you started seminary a second time? What do you think younger Ethan or younger Nathan could benefit from older Nathan knowing now?
The best advice that I would give to a younger Nathan would probably be, chill out, man. Things are going to be okay. It might be hard, but you can do it. And you just need to put your head down and get it done. The other thing that I would like to say is there's a quote that I've been holding on to for your podcast. Ooh. that is from my favorite video game of all time. Let me try and remember the quote so that I can do it right. Okay. Impossible is just a word that people use to make themselves feel better when they quit.
Ooh, I love that.
That is a quote from a video game from when I was a kid, and it has stuck with me till all this time. And I have always loved that. It's just the idea that, like, the only reason the word impossible exists is to make yourself feel better.
Yeah, no, I think that's completely it. I mean, so much of doing something, I think, is we get in our own heads and we look at all the reasons we can't be successful and we say, oh, well, we can't do it because of all these reasons, without having actually tried to do it.
Yeah, yeah. And that's not to say that everybody can achieve everything, but like it's, you can push those limits. Yeah. Like, find out how far you can get. It might not be where you were aiming for, but you'll be somewhere different.
Well,
and it will probably be better than where you started.
I mean, I wanted to get into vet school and I'm not a veterinarian now. So,
I have a master's of divinity and I'm working in social work.
You just never know.
Like, you never know. Like, you don't know what the right thing is for you all the time, but that doesn't mean that you shouldn't try.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you try, you might make it. If you don't try, you'll never make it. And you'll always wonder if you could.
Now I'm thinking of all the corny quotes that like have stuck in my brain all these years, and like that immediately made me think of, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take.
I was gonna say that one too. Yep. Oh my goodness, I'm definitely gonna have to bring you back and we can do that, just have like a whole bunch of corny quotes like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll just like get a big list, and then we need to do the Andy trifecta.
Yes.
So that'll be a couple hours of content for you, and then whenever you decide to do the Star Wars spinoff, I'm here.
When COVID ends, we'll have to do a vlog with some of those like motivational quotes, and we'll have to do it like where one of us reads it off and tries to make the other one laugh.
That sounds good. I'm there for that.
All right. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the podcast. It's always a good time. I knew this would be one of the more relaxed podcasts, and I think we did a decent job staying on topic.
You think? I think you're going to be real surprised when you go back and listen to this thing. You're going to have a real fun time on that editing floor, buddy.
It's fine. We'll get there.
I look forward to hearing it. I am subscribed in my podcast app.
Hey, thanks very much. Yeah, and for everybody else out there listening, please subscribe, rate it. Even if it's you stink, you can do all these things to get better. I'm always looking to improve. So any suggestions you have, feel free to let me know.
Yeah, and just don't tell me I stink, because I'm very sensitive. Yes, and please, I can't take that.
Please don't berate my guests, because then it'll just be me talking, and that's sad. No one wants to hear just me talking.
Oh, somebody does. Your mom listens, right?
Yeah, I think she's all like 37 listens I have right now. I think she just listens to it on repeat and to make me feel good.
Well, that's what moms are for.
It is, yes. She tells me I'm special all the time.
Exactly. How would you know that you're special if your mom didn't tell you?
Oh, my sister makes sure to tell me I'm not.
That's what sisters are for. That's what siblings are for.
Yes, it is.
They're there to take you down all the notches that your mom tries to bring you up.
Yeah, keeps you level, right?
Exactly. It evens out.
All right, man. Well, you take care and enjoy the rest of your evening.
Thanks. You too, Ethan.
All right. See ya.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Achieve Your Impossible. If you or someone you know has a story they would like to share on the podcast, please feel free to email me at impossibleachieved1@gmail.com or message me on the Facebook page, Ethan A. Taylor, Achieve Your Impossible. I want to have as many people on the show as possible sharing their stories of how they've overcome challenges and obstacles in their life to achieve their dreams. Hopefully, through sharing all of our stories, we can encourage those who are in similar situations to begin taking the first steps to achieving their dreams.